Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
As you have noticed by the continued graphic, we are in the midst of a series on not only our stewardship of our financial resources, but how to live lives where the stewardship of those resources are part of the spiritual decision-making that we are doing in our everyday lives, where those ordinary decisions about how we live with all of what we've been given are part of how we live lives of contentment and of joy before God and before one another. And this week's message, or this week's topic, is in some ways the heart of that learning, because it is about how we learn to live in contentment, how we learn to live more simply and sustainably. As Linda was mentioning, this is about how we take care of the earth as stewards of the earth. This is about how we take care of our bodies. This is about how we simplify and keep from overspending. This is about how we find joy in the everyday. This weekend, yesterday morning, I went with some members of my family to the good old wonderful Monshire Museum of Science. And a curious thing happened. It was like somebody knew that this was the message I was going to give today. For some reason, normally when we walk in, the exhibits take hold of everyone's attention. For some reason, this day it was the gift shop. It was the gift shop that took hold of our attention, some of us more than others. And there were some particular items within the gift shop that took special hold of special people's attention. Those scarves are really nice. Also, there was a helicopter. I'm just saying, there was a helicopter. We weren't the only ones there. Now, we do have a family pass to the Monshire Museum, so, you know, if we go and only look at the gift shop, it's not a huge deal. But there was another family in there who was also having trouble drawing the attention away from the items in the gift shop. And the father was lamenting and just turned to me and he said, "We spent all this money to get in here and he's just in a toy store, you know? He's just playing with the things in the gift shop." And I know. I know. Sometimes we tell ourselves and we are here in our faith that we need to become more childlike. But there are some aspects of being a child that, you know, we do need to outgrow over time. Impulse control is not something we're born with. Contentment with what we have needs to be cultivated. When we're young and young at heart and susceptible to the world around us and its messages, we can buy into the impulse very easily that we need something else and we need it right now. As if there aren't other helicopter toys at home. I can point them out to you. No, 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 this is the one I want. As if I don't already have 20 scarves. But that one looks really nice. We learn over time, we cultivate over time, or not, our ability to be content with what we have. And we build up a kind of resistance and resiliency to the onslaught of advertising in the world. One of the best examples of this for me was a telephone scam that I fell victim to the first year I was in ministry. We did not have a person working in the office at that church at that time. And I got a phone call, and it was about 10 days before Christmas. I was exhausted. I was overworked. I wasn't paying attention. And the person told me they were representing the phone company that we had a contract with, and I just needed to authorize a change to the bill. So I authorized it, right? I wasn't paying attention, and it sounded like a good deal. Well, it took several months to undo that mistake and the $60 additional a month that started getting charged to the church's phone bill. And to get that money back, it took quite a while because my resiliency was way down, right? My ability to resist the tricks around me was way down. Our ability to resist the temptations, the advertisements, the culture that tells us we need more is something we have to build and nurture and strengthen. Or when we're feeling tired or not ourselves, it's a lot harder to hold on to that conviction. We know we can't take it with us. We know we can't hold on to the stuff that we gather. I love that phrase that consumption is a wasting disease. It's true. And when we gather things just for the sake of gathering, we call that hoarding, right? We call that's just too much stuff. There are shows about it. It's not healthy for us, and we know that. And we also see the flip side of this. We tend to see it in times of disaster, floods and fires that destroy our stuff, wipe our stuff out. I know families who've lost homes, who've lost all the things in their homes. I know churches who've lost their buildings. And what we discover through that, what we're reminded through that, is that it's not the stuff. It's, yes, the memories. It's what it means to us. But it's the people and the experiences and the things that our stuff represents that make it special and sacred to us. We can't take it with us otherwise. And those are the things we can't buy, it turns out. The people, the memories, the experiences. We can't recreate those or go back and get more of those after the sale has run out. And those, it turns out, are the things that matter. My stepmother, when she was a child, they lost their family home in a fire. And the only thing, she said, after all these years that she misses are the photo albums. Because they were those memories. They were those moments that had been captured up until the time she was about 12 years old. And there just are no pictures. Other family members have given them a few, but that was what was most precious. At the end of the day, we know that it's not about the things. It's about the moments. It's about the people. It's about the relationships. These are the things that give us joy. We know this. But we have to guard against a world, a sea telling us that we need something else and we need it now. We need that scarf and we need it now. Now, some discontent is a good thing. It's okay to be discontented because it's part of what encourages us to do better or to do more. James McIntosh, the Scottish philosopher and politician of the late 18th and early 19th century, said, "It is right to be contented with what we have, but never with what we are." Meaning that we should always be striving to do better. We should always be working on our relationship with God, with others, trying to be more prayerful, more loving, more generous, more kind. We should always be seeking to better ourselves, not to better our station, but to do the inner work of our hearts. It's okay to be discontented with that, because it means we want to keep growing. But we tend to do the opposite. We tend to be very content with how loving we are, very content with how kind we are, very content with how we treat other people. Maybe that's okay. Maybe we're doing pretty well. But we tend to be discontented with things like what we have in front of us, our homes, our jobs, our spouses, our parents, our children. How come everybody else's kids are so well-behaved and mine aren't? How come somebody else's house doesn't have all of the problems that mine definitely does? And we get discontented with what we have. To cultivate contentment is to live simply, and to live simply is to cultivate contentment. They kind of go together, so I've got some steps for each. But they kind of go hand in hand. As we heard, the Apostle Paul was good at cultivating contentment. He had learned how to live in difficult times and in good times. He had to, because he was making his living, earning his bread, literally and figuratively, based on the generosity of those around him. And so sometimes, as we know, that generosity is great, and you have a good benefit dinner, and everything is going well, and sometimes it's a little bit leaner and a little bit harder. And so he had to learn to make do with that, and found that that he understood a couple of important principles. He understood it could be worse. There was a book when I was a kid. Did anyone else read that? With this guy who's having like a really horrible time, and the like wise old grandfather just keeps saying, well, it could be worse. And like everything this kid can come up with, no matter how awful it is, the wise old grandfather just keeps saying, it could be worse. There's a certain wisdom to that, right? Could be worse. This book I was reading said, it recommends that when we're feeling discontented with those things in front of us, our homes, our jobs, our spouses, that we just remind ourselves it could be worse. They're clear to mention, don't say that out loud in that last instance. If you're feeling frustrated with your spouse, your children, your parents, don't say, oh, well, it could be worse to them. They don't recommend that. That doesn't mean that we're being negative Nellies and we're trying to be as much of a downer as possible. That means that we're trying to recognize actually how blessed we are. The wisdom of knowing that it could be worse, which often is born through the pain of it having been worse, teaches us to count as miraculous the blessings that we do have. Because we know that at any moment, this precious, beautiful, fragile life that we have and all the little details of it, anyone could change in any moment. And so the gift that we have in front of us is beautiful and sacred and precious. And so the second thing we do is we develop a grateful heart in looking at those gifts, in seeing them for what they are. And we can even develop gratitude for those things that annoy us. It's true. The best way I've learned to practice this is when I'm driving and I'm stuck behind someone who's driving slowly. I don't like to drive slowly. I tend to run late, which is my own problem, and I don't like to drive slowly because then I'm going to be even more late. And what I find myself thinking is some less than flattering things about the person in front of me driving. But my attitude entirely changes if I intentionally flip the narrative and I say to myself, as if I'm talking to the person ahead of me, thank you for driving cautiously. Thank you for slowing down, because I bet this is a speed trap and there's somebody waiting to give me a ticket. Thank you for being safe and for making sure that other people on the road are safe. And you know what? I'm less angry inside. I mean, it's not just like I'm thinking different things or saying different things. I'm actually less angry and impatient, and I'm less worried about getting someplace on time when I am being grateful for the gift in front of me, even though it's something that annoys me. It actually changes my whole outlook on that drive and doesn't get me anywhere any faster, but quite frankly, neither does getting frustrated with the person ahead of me. And so it changes our whole worldview when we look for the things to be grateful for, even and especially in the midst of those things that drive us absolutely bananas. We can find ways to be grateful. And when we teach ourselves and cultivate that gratefulness, it transforms some of what we experience in all kinds of things around us. We can ask ourselves when considering something else, something new, whatever it is, how long will this really make me happy? This is the big trap for me, especially with gadgets and technology, right? They always tell you, you got to get that cell phone with the new every 2-year plan so that you can just trade it up. Not because it's old or broken or bad or there's anything wrong with it, just because you're done, you're bored, you want the new thing. They just came out with the next model and you got to have it. But when we stop and ask ourselves, really, how long will this make me happy? We find that the answer is usually, well, it's not this that's going to make me happy. And so that's the fourth point to cultivating contentment, is to ask ourselves, where does my soul find satisfaction? Where do I find joy? Because it's not this gadget and it's not this thing. Where do I find joy? What always comes back to me are actually the words of St. Augustine, of all people. He says, God, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until we find rest in you. Where do we find joy? Where does my soul find joy and rest? The psalmist says, my soul pants for you as a deer for water, right? My rest, my hope, my contentment, what really gives me joy and peace, that is God alone. That's the key. Finding that fulfillment in God. As Paul says, I can do all these things through Christ who strengthens me. It's not about whether or not anybody sent him a thank offering that week. It's about Christ who strengthens him. The rest will come. So some practical ideas for simplifying our lives so that we can live lives of contentment. We can set goals to reduce consumption. I had some similar statistics based on some of the things that Linda had mentioned. In the United States, and this is a couple years old, so it may have changed, but I imagine, you know, a few 100,000 water bottles doesn't make that big of a difference. Yet, in the United States, we use 2.5 million plastic bottles. An hour. 2.5 million plastic bottles an hour, most of them for water. You know, the stuff that you can get out of the fountain or the tap if your water filter is any good. And I recognize there are places in the world where drinkable water is not readily accessible. But where it is, in most of the United States, we're still using 2.5 million plastic bottles an hour. There's something wrong about that. It's wasteful and it's unsustainable. We in the United States make up about 5% of the world's population, but we generate 40% of the garbage. Where does it go? Where does it go? So we can set goals to reduce utilities, to reduce consumption, to turn the thermostat back a few degrees. We know these sorts of things, to carry a cup or a bottle yourself so that you're not buying a new one and refill it, to carry shopping bags instead of getting a new paper or plastic, that sort of thing. They're drops in the bucket, perhaps, but if we can reduce some of those 2.5 million plastic bottles, well, that would be a good thing. We ask ourselves before purchasing something, do I really need it? Do I really need it? To help us with this, we have a little gift for everyone today that I think we'll have at the back, and also we have some of those financial principle cards from last week if you didn't get those. But these are little key tags, you know, just like your shopper club card that you can put on your keychain, but it says contentment on one side, and then on the other side a little prayer. Lord, help me to be grateful for what I have, to remember that I don't need most of what I want, and that joy is found in simplicity and generosity. Just that little check before we buy something, maybe. So if you'd like one of those, make sure you grab one after worship, a great tool to help us ask that question. When we do buy things, this is one of those old standbys that my parents taught me. You buy something pretty good and use it up till it's gone, as opposed to buying something less expensive but having to buy it 5 times. It's kind of the calculus of how we figure that out. If we find ways to entertain ourselves with the things that last, again, it's not about the stuff we have, it's about the time we spend together in love, in friendship, in joy. And then we can ask ourselves, are there major changes that we can make in our lives that would help us simplify? Things like downsizing, going from 2 cars to 1, some households are able to do that. Downsizing in home size. I know a lot of folks do that, especially as children leave and go to school or as people retire and look at what really do we need. And every time we downsize a home, that comes with downsizing the stuff you can put in it, because we're like goldfish, we expand to the size of our tank, right? Reducing debt, actually, like we talked about last week, is one of those big changes that we make in our lives that actually simplifies our life, makes it easier to live by planning in advance, paying down the things that have been before, and letting us live in the moment with more simplicity and joy. So that thing we lack as children, that thing we lack when our defenses are down, that self-control, when we cultivate it, cultivate contentment and gratitude and thanksgiving, we find that we have wealth beyond measure. Benjamin Franklin said, contentment makes poor people rich, but discontentment makes rich people poor. When I was in college, I was reflecting on this. I was actually reading the Confessions of Augustine, that part about our hearts are restless until we find rest in thee. And I looked up, and I'm in the middle of a college classroom, and somebody had put on the windowsill an empty soda can with a dandelion in it. And I thought, in that moment, there was something so remarkable about that, Now, my kids love dandelions. They're weeds, but my kids love dandelions. They're so bright and joyful and exciting. And here was this weed all that time ago, just sitting in an empty soda can. But there was something kind of beautiful about the simplicity and ordinariness of that gift at that moment. It doesn't take much to make us happy. It doesn't take much to put a smile on our face, to give us joy sometimes. It's finding the blessing in that simple gift. In that way, we can be more childlike because we can find joy in the simple moments. You know, those kids that are more fun playing with the cardboard box than the toy that came in it. Or the cat. The cat does that too. More fun playing in the cardboard box than the toys that come in it. We can recapture the excitement and wonder and peace that we find in simple gifts and fill that hole inside us that we're always trying to fill with something else, remembering that it's God we're seeking, it's wholeness we're seeking, it's love we're seeking. Our hearts will always be restless until we find that peace and that contentment. Let's look for it. Amen.